For more than 2 weeks, tents and posters have filled a section of the University of Michigan's central campus, known as the Diag.
Are you going to be here? Are you going to make sacrifices? And are you going to stand with the people of Palestine and with the people of Gaza so long as we live?
That was Salma Halmami, president of Students Allied for Freedom and Equality, one of several pro-Palestinian groups on campus. The encampment is in protest to the deaths of tens of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza since October 7th. The protesters are also calling for the U of M to divest from any and all companies that benefit Israel's military and governance in the Palestinian territories. Today on the pod, we'll talk about that demand in the context of other social movements, and we'll get perspectives on how Jewish students are feeling about the campus climate. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The calls for divestment are not new in student activism or at the University of Michigan. Student campaigns have convinced the university to divest in the past. So how can that history of activism help us understand what's going on in Ann Arbor right now? Michigan Public reporters Kate Wells and Adam Yahya Reyes have been reporting on this. Hey, Kate. Hi, Adam.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
So when we talk about the protesters on the Diag in Ann Arbor and we see the encampments asking for disinvestment, who exactly is this? Kate, what do they mean by divestment?
Yeah, so let's talk about who they are. These encampments that we're seeing right now over the last couple of weeks, these are only the latest example of activism at Michigan's campus. There was protests back in November. There have been protests since. There was, of course, the honors convocation that got interrupted. And at the November protests, about 40 students were reportedly arrested. So over this period of time, you've seen a group called the Tahrir Coalition really take the lead. They describe themselves as a coalition of more than 90 student organizations on campus, and they've been leading those calls for divestment. The Michigan Faculty Senate, we should say, also passed a resolution in January calling on the university to, quote, divest from its financial holdings and companies that invest in Israel's ongoing military campaign in Gaza. And when we talk about divestment, what we're talking about is the university's endowment, of course, which is a reported massive $17.9 billion fund that is then divided up into thousands and thousands of smaller funds and assets and smaller endowments. And protesters say, look, any ties that this endowment has to Israel's military campaign, they say that makes the university complicit in a humanitarian crisis.
Right. So how has the university officially responded?
They addressed this in March at a Board of Regents meeting. Regent Sarah Hubbard said, look, we have heard these calls. We've listened carefully to them. And then she talked about the endowment. She said the primary purpose of the endowment is to, quote, generate the greatest possible income. And she says that means having a diverse investment portfolio and minimizing risk.
After deliberation, we have decided to stand by our longstanding policy. We will continue to shield the endowment from political pressures and base our investment decisions on financial factors such as risk and return. We are not moving to make any divestment of any kind from the university endowment.
You'll notice, though, that what she talks about there is just political pressure. She doesn't say, look, we've weighed the ethical and moral issues here and we're going to have next steps for this conversation. It's just, hey, political pressure, we're shielding the endowment. And that is a longstanding policy for sure, but it doesn't take into account, as you mentioned, April, more than 50 years of the university divesting and shifting its investment strategy in response to student activism. And we talked with Professor Matthew Lassiter. He's a history professor at the university, and his classes have researched those movements and their impact on divestment.
When universities today say, oh, this should not be a political issue, it just rings hypocritical to student activists because universities have repeatedly negotiated with and sometimes caved in to student activism on this.
Okay. So, Adam, what do we actually know about Michigan's endowment investments? How much is actually connected to Israel and to the current war in Gaza?
So the university says its investment in companies with ties to Israel or military technology and manufacturing are a very small part of that endowment. A university spokesperson clarified that the university has less than $7.2 million or under 0.04% of the overall endowment indirectly invested through larger funds in technology companies related to autonomous flying, cyber defense, digital forensics, aerospace, or similar fields. But there's still a lot we don't know. These indirect investments are just part of the overall endowment picture, and the university's definition of companies that have ties with Israel or military tech and manufacturing might be very different from the ways activists define it. That was the case with the fight to get U of M to divest from South Africa in the 70s and 80s. The university believed that that divestment shouldn't include companies based in Michigan, even if they were doing business in South Africa during its apartheid regime. But students obviously very much disagreed and pushed and ultimately successfully got the university to even divest that part of its endowment as well. The university annually puts out these reports, audits that are several hundred pages long, filled with all kinds of information about the endowment and investment strategies. But there's a lot of detail that they leave out. Which companies are in these commingled funds the university invested with? Direct investments are also hard to capture. The locations of these companies, how much each one gets, and that's by design. The 2004 state law that U of M lobbied for protected universities from having to divulge their investments in records requests. They were worried that companies would reject their investments to keep rival companies from knowing things like total returns or having to share details about their operations in FOIA requests. So all we really have to go off of is what the university says.
Huh. Well, what about previous times when the U of M has divested? Can you tell us a little bit about what occasions that happened on and why the decision was made?
So like we said before, there's been a lot of instances in which students and faculty activism has successfully pushed the university to change its investment strategy. We talked about South Africa a little bit. Years of anti-apartheid activism in the 70s and 80s were one of the main reasons the university ultimately divested from South Africa. A state law helped with that as well. It ended up taking years, though, to get the full divestment. And of the divestments we looked at, this one took the biggest chunk of the endowment. Probably over 10% of it was taken out with this divestment. In 2000, the university divested from tobacco companies after a committee decided that both tobacco and tobacco companies' activities were antithetical to the university's missions of research, teaching, and service. That was a much smaller portion of the endowment, but they believed it was still important on a moral stance to take that out, despite how little of a total portion it was. And then in 2021, the university announced it would shift its investment strategy away from fossil fuels to ensure the investment portfolio reaches a net zero carbon footprint by 2050. This came after students were arrested during protests for divestment at regent meetings that sometimes got a little rowdy. The announcement said the shift would help protect investments from climate change-related financial risk. But the university did also credit students, with one regent telling MLive that it was important that the students kept pushing for divestment despite backlash from the administration. And most recently, in 2022, U of M announced it would make no further investments in Russia and move as quickly as is practical to exit its remaining investments after the invasion of Ukraine. Again, it nodded to increasing financial risk associated with such investments. There were some calls for this divestment from students, but they never had to get as loud or wait as long as others had. It was a little over a month between the invasion starting and U of M announcing this divestment.
Okay, so clearly this has happened. Looking at those instances, you two, what kind of lessons or comparisons do you think we can make to today? What is it that makes for a successful divestment campaign?
Yeah, looking at this and talking to experts, it seems like there's three big things that we can tell about history here that has some relationship to today. Number one, this takes a long time often, years and years with something like South Africa or with tobacco, with fossil fuels. Number two, that they're often really controversial at the beginning. And three, that to be successful, they have to eventually gain a really broad social and political census, not just on campus. Like, it takes a while for sort of the rest of the, with something like South Africa, the rest of the politics to catch up in order for them to be successful. And that's actually, the university has a policy about, hey, when we're talking about divestment, here's how we should figure it out. Here's the steps we should take. Here's how we should decide to do it. And that consensus part is a really big part of it. The other thing they have to grapple with, though, is they just have to figure out, as Adam's talked about, like the logistics. So like with fossil fuels, they had to figure out, well, what is a fossil fuel stock? I mean, something like an oil company seems really obvious. But, you know, what if you've got a company that makes drills and those drills are sometimes used to make wells? Anytime you're talking about complicated investments like this, it gets into the nitty gritty really fast.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Lassiter, the history professor, says these movements are often shaped by the way administrations respond to them. If you crack down on a mostly nonviolent protest movement, that, he says, usually has the actual direct opposite effect. You fuel fires and heighten tension and passions even more. He also said these movements are often unpopular or really divisive when they're happening. You know, pointing, he says, closest analogy we have to this is probably the divestment movement and protests around the Vietnam War or the U.S. invasion of Vietnam. Specifically, students were targeting the university's investments in Michigan-based Dow Chemical, which had developed chemical weapons that were used in Vietnam. The university, as far as we know, did not ultimately divest. And here's what Lassiter had to say about that.
By the early 70s, a majority of Americans thought the Vietnam War had been a mistake. And a majority of Americans thought that campus activists were a bunch of privileged troublemakers who should be arrested and put in jail and expelled.
Students have been calling for the university to divest from Israel since at least 2005, when the student assembly passed a resolution calling for just that. We'll have to see whether any movement comes after all this time.
The protests that are happening at the U of M are being organized by a multiracial and interfaith collective known as the Tahrir Coalition. It includes Jewish students on campus. At the same time, there are other members of the Jewish community who say that the tenor of the discourse on campus is inflammatory and even anti-Semitic. We're going to take a short break here. When we get back, we'll talk with a few University of Michigan students with a very different perspective on what it's like to be Jewish on campus right now. Stick with us.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Today, we've invited two students from the campus group Hillel to talk to us about what it's been like being on campus in this moment and their feelings about the conversation about university investments and divestment. With us now are Ryan Silberfein. She's chair of the University of Michigan's Hillel chapter. Ryan, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Jack Landstein. He's the vice president of engagement for Michigan Hillel. He's majoring in economics and minoring in entrepreneurship and Judaic studies. Jack, it's good to have you too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask you both what it's been like for you to be on campus experiencing what happened to Israel and what is happening in Gaza over the past 6 or 7 months. I don't know. Ryan, would you like to start? And then Jack, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you've experienced it too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been really difficult. I think that's the easiest way to put it. I come from a pretty Jewish town, a little bit of a bubble, honestly. So I was prepared by my home Jewish community to go to a place where I might be a little more alone, but I was never expecting a war like this to break out. And it really impacted me in a lot of different ways. First of all, it actually got me a little bit more involved with Hillel. I actually chose to take on the position of president after October 7th because I found myself helping out in any way that I could. And I wanted to be involved because that was somewhat comforting to me. And it made me feel like I had a little more control over the situation. But it's been difficult to focus on studies. It's been difficult to communicate with professors that I know have differing opinions for me. I'm concerned that my grades might suffer because of that. I've had difficulty focusing on assignments and needed extensions in many different classes. I've changed which classes that I've even signed up for because of it. Following October 7th, our president of the university sent out an email saying, obviously, what's going on in the world is awful, and he feels for students that have been impacted by this. But certain people were frustrated that he seemed to quote unquote align himself with Israel in his email, which I thought it was pretty neutral, but other people disagreed. And in response to the president's email, some faculty wrote a letter back to him saying how appalled they were and kind of showed their colors on the situation. And over 1,000 faculty members signed this letter. And not just faculty, there were like librarians and PhD students that were allowed to sign this as well. And I found a lot of my professors' names on that email. And so when choosing my classes for the next semester, I honestly consulted that to hopefully avoid some of these professors that would sign such an inflammatory email.
Jack Landstein, could you maybe say, I was curious to know what your experience has been like on campus for the past half year or so.
Yeah, so like Ryan said, campus has also been very challenging. I think, when we're sitting in the undergraduate library studying and students come marching through this place with bullhorns, or if you're inside the Ross School of Business and students coming with bullhorns chanting Intifada, Intifada, or, there's only one solution, Intifada Revolution. All that rhetoric is very unsettling for Jewish students and just students in general on campus, I think. When you recognize how this is not normal and you start talking about what's actually happening, it's very disheartening, to know what's happening where we're trying to get our education. And it's ultimately scary. And for some students, it's terrifying. And I think the emotional challenge of handling everything that's happening right now is something students are really struggling with.
Ryan, you were at the Diag this week with your family visiting from out of town. That's a place where there's an encampment of pro-Palestinian demonstrators. Can you say a little bit about what you saw or heard?
Yeah. So when my mom was in town this past week, my sister's a freshman here. So when she was in town to pack us up, she wanted to go see it for herself with her own eyes. So almost every day we took a walk through the Diag. Sometimes we stayed longer than others. The other day we sat down because it was a beautiful day out on a blanket because that's what the Diag's meant for. And we had an Israeli flag with us and we had a lot of derogatory things yelled at us or said under people's breaths as they walked by. Over the course of the past few weeks, I've been told that I support genocide. I was told to F off. I was called a nasty Zionist. And just the other day with my mom, we were flipped off and told that we should sit on the floor with our terrorist flag and support apartheid because we're white and obviously we would. And the other day, another guy from the encampment said to a bunch of us Jewish students standing there that we hate people with his color skin tone. They know nothing about my beliefs, and that's what's even more frustrating to me. I would love to just sit down and have a conversation, a civil conversation, and have discourse with these people, but they actually have a non-engagement policy where they, quote, do not engage with instigators. I would love to just hear where these people are coming from. If they're hurting, I want to hear that. That gives me a lot more context and understanding why these people are doing what they're doing. But the fact that they refuse to speak to us is just so frustrating. I have no other words for it.
Do you two feel like the tone has changed over the months?
I think just directly after October 7th, it was really difficult. I think there was a lot of confusion. We didn't really know what was going on. We were waiting by our phones, waiting to hear news from family and friends overseas. And it was just difficult to kind of understand exactly what was happening. But on our campus already, people were praising the attacks of October 7th, specifically the main group on campus called SAFE. Students Allied for Freedom and Equality. They're essentially a chapter of SJP on this campus. They praised October 7th the day after. Like Israel hadn't even responded yet, and they were already glorifying these attacks. And I think a lot of Jewish students were just coping and grieving because this was the biggest attack on the Jewish people since the Holocaust and the first one in most of our lifetimes. Like most of us did not live through the first or second Intifada. So it was just really difficult at first. And then there were a few protests, nothing crazy, a few posters being put up here and there. And then we all got to go home for break. And I think that was very necessary. I think we started the semester off on a really good foot. January and February were pretty quiet. And then things took a turn in March when there was another student government election. And there was a party that ran. Their title was Shut It Down in all caps, fittingly. And their entire purpose for running was to shut down student government until the university divests. Unfortunately, they did get elected. And I think since then, things have escalated even further. There have been more aggressive protests, as Jack said, going through student buildings, disrupting studying, disrupting classrooms. You can see a clear escalation.
When you hear a call for divestment, Jack, I wonder if you can tell us what that means to you.
So when I hear a call for a divestment, I think that is anti-Semitic. It's targeting Jewish businesses. It's targeting Israel because it's a Jewish state. But it can also hurt anybody who lives in Israel. An Israeli is Jewish, could be Arab, could be Palestinian, could be Druish. That's an Israeli. It's not just Jews. And this concept of divestment is because people believe Israel is not a legitimate country, which is incorrect, and that is anti-Semitic to believe that.
You mentioned the fact that folks who are organizing the protests have not recently been wanting to talk with folks from Hillel or other groups in dialogue. Has the conflict right now, has this come up in other classes, or have you had other conversations with people on campus who aren't involved in the protests?
I think it's definitely a big issue when protests do occur and professors or tenured staff members or graduate student instructors send emails out to their classes saying there will be no repercussions if you skip this class and go to the protest, or awarding extra credit points to students who attend these protests. That is not acceptable. And it also puts a strain on the Jewish students in the class who have different views. There is an incredible power dynamic between the student learning and those who are grading what the students are submitting. And this creates a sense of pressure that is completely unacceptable in the world of academia. And the university should be acting to ensure that all students are receiving fair grades for the effort and the thought they put into all their assignments, rather than political views. Say a class like the Arab-Israeli conflict, that's a class designed to have those type of discussions and those dialogues, and those instructors and professors are prepared to handle the numerous number of opinions students have, and because they are trained in that fashion, it is a safe space to have that dialogue. However, that should not come up in an econ class or an environmental studies class. That is not a place where the faculty is equipped to have a conversation about this conflict.
I hear what you're saying, and it's not hard to understand how receiving an email like that from a lecturer or a professor would really give you pause. It is kind of funny to me that we're having this conversation about the University of Michigan, which has such a huge and long history with political protest. I mean, this was a campus that had a big SDS chapter back in the day, and some founding members of the movement were part of it during Vietnam War protests and during the civil rights movement. There were intense moments. Could you two just tell me a little bit about what your expectation is about what it means to be on a campus where people don't just disagree, but they have incredibly strong feelings of disagreement? I mean, we've talked to Arab American folks on the show who've been watching videos on their socials from Gaza, and just they're just speechless about violence that they have seen perpetrated on people that look like them. Like, when there are maybe two truths that are happening at the same time, that Israel was attacked and there are still people whose lives are in the balance because of that, but also there are military attacks that have resulted in a lot of civilian casualties. What are your expectations for what a campus community needs to be like in a time like that?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely true that there can be multiple truths at the same time. And obviously, Jack and I are both Jewish students, and the two of us experience this in, honestly, in different ways, even from each other, but we seem to be on one side of the spectrum. And I absolutely have empathy and space to understand how somebody else might be feeling who has different connections to this problem. But A, these people refuse to speak with us, so I actually don't get to hear from them and hear how sad this must be for them and how frustrating. And I don't get to hear what they want to see on this campus. Like, I would love to hear from them. Like, what would you like to see change? And my other problem with the protests is, look, I'm all in favor of protests. I think if you want to get your opinion out there, like, sometimes there's only one way to do it. And Michigan is proud of our history of protests. But if you're going to protest, you might as well follow the rules. And I think that whenever we have done rallies or held vigils since October 7th, we have been very diligent in following the rules of the university. We get a permit to be in the Diag. We follow the rules about amplified sound and only use microphones and speakers from 12 to 1 p.m. We make sure that there's no trash left behind, et cetera, et cetera. And the problem is that a lot of these other protests have broken policy after policy from the university and even the law. Like, absolutely, would we love to protest every day in the Diag and not have a permit for it? Sure, that's a lot easier than doing the tedious process of getting the permit to be there and organizing the whole thing. But when we see other people doing it and breaking the rules and having no consequences, it's so frustrating.
The university has this responsibility to balance the need of some folks to protest while also protecting students who feel unsafe right now. How do you two think the UM is doing with this?
I can understand where administration is coming from when they don't want to shut down this encampment. I think a lot of us think that the police going in and arresting all these people is the wrong approach. I think a lot of us are not in favor of that. We've seen what's happened at Emory and Columbia and some of these other campuses and how the actually enforcing some of these policies creates further escalation and tensions, which I can agree is probably not the right route. But at the same time, the anti-Semitism is off the charts and policies are being broken left and right. And we're concerned about graduation coming up. And at a certain point, there has to be a happy medium where you can still enforce your policies without creating further escalation. And I can understand not wanting to become the next USC, Columbia, Yale, Emory, UCLA. But at the same time, you also have an obligation to protect your Jewish students on this campus. And when we voiced that this has now crossed a line multiple times, then something has to be done about it.
Yeah. I mean, it seems hard because on the one hand, the experiences that you've described of, you know, carrying an Israeli flag and having people make comments to you that you feel are very hurtful, it's not hard to understand what might the university reaction be in that situation. But just to say that maybe a student group shouldn't use the phrase apartheid to talk about Palestinian territories, that's a whole different step in terms of how the university is being asked to police speech. Jack, could you say a little bit more about what you'd like to see from the university at this moment?
Yeah, I think so. The university has a job to protect the rights of students, student safety, and that it's physical and mental/emotional safety. When we all sign on to commit to the University of Michigan, we sign the Student Code of Conduct and that we will adhere to school policies. And that is how the school engages all the students and provides a safe educational experience. And having signed onto these policies, I expect that if other students break these policies, the school upholds these policies in a manner that protects all students at this school, not just Jewish students. And blocking the Diag right now is not protecting students with disabilities. It is not protecting students if there's an emergency in the Hatcher Library. Same thing goes for marching through buildings with bullhorns is not protecting students who are taking an exam or in a lecture getting their education. That is not protecting students. You know, First Amendment protects a lot of speech, but when lines are crossed, such as intimidation, harassment, distress, the school needs to take action to protect its students. No level of hate is acceptable on a college campus. No level of anti-Semitism, no level of Islamophobia, no level of racism. This should not be acceptable on a college campus. And in nurturing a place where students can learn and have a good dialogue, the school should be ensuring that hate is not present on campus.
Does that mean not expressing criticism for Israel?
There is a complete difference between expressing criticism for Israel and expressing criticism about the Israeli government. I use an example of, I can love the United States of America and hate my president, but for some reason, when this conversation shifts to Israel, it's all about Israel and nobody seems to critique the government. And I think most of us would disagree with many policies of the Israeli government. However, I still love the country of Israel. I have a number of friends there. I have been there before. I have seen what life is like. And I think it's extremely irresponsible to delegitimize an entire country because of policies the government makes.
The encampment at the University of Michigan in support of Gaza was started and is led in part by a group of Jewish students on campus. The group is called Jewish Voice for Peace, and it defines itself as anti-Zionist and is now singularly focused on leveraging its power as a body of students to push the U of M to divest from businesses with interests tied to the Israeli government and military. Katya Olson-Shipyatsky is a leader within Jewish Voice for Peace, and she's been staying at the encampment in Ann Arbor. She joins us now. Katya, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me, April.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about divestment, which obviously is a big focus at the encampment here at Michigan and also at a number of other campuses around the United States. Michigan's regents have declined calls to divest the endowment from funds or companies that have ties to Israel's military. They told the Detroit News that in the case of Israeli and military companies, the university's indirect exposure is less than 1/25th of 1% of the endowment's market value, less than $7 million. And they've also said that the endowment is intentionally protected from political pressure. It's notable that divestments have occurred in the past for different kinds of issues. Do you think divestment is achievable here?
I think divestment is absolutely achievable. History has shown us time and time again, both at the University of Michigan and at other universities, that divestment is possible, that divestment is a moral imperative, and that it will come when enough pressure is applied to the university. We saw that with South African apartheid. We even saw that here at the University of Michigan when the university divested from Russian companies and companies enabling Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022. Within a week of the start of that invasion. So divestment is possible. And as the genocide rages on in Gaza, we're now in the seventh month of this genocide. Each day it becomes more and more obvious and more imperative that the university must divest.
If that does happen, do you see that playing a role in helping to end the conflict?
Yeah. So obviously it's like a network of factors that are enabling the genocide to happen in Gaza. And we know I don't have to tell anyone listening to this probably about like the link between United States weapons manufacturers and the US government and Israeli government and Israeli army. We know that the US and Israel have a very strong link. That support comes from a lot of different places. And we know the Tahrir Coalition at the University of Michigan has done really extensive research into the university's investments. And we know that the university is invested in companies that are sending weapons to Israel. And the support and like the factors in the United States that enable this genocide to happen are like really broad. And I think that it's the job of like everyone in the United States right now whose tax dollars and in our case, whose tuition dollars go to fund this genocide, exert all of the pressure that we possibly can on the people who are making the decisions to invest money in weapons manufacturers and send money that enables genocide in Gaza right now. Because this is like the particular like corner of American support for the genocide in Gaza where we find ourselves, this is where we have the obligation to push back right now.
How do you see the role of protesters here in Ann Arbor against the larger map of what's going on?
I would say that we're one network of a broader community of people all over the country who are demanding that their universities divest from genocide. And we've, you know, for a variety of reasons, many of which like we don't know ourselves, we've seen like less of a like militarized police response here at the University of Michigan. But I guess I'll just speak for myself. Like I see us as in community with the protesters at Columbia, the protesters at UCLA. We're all fighting to like end support for the genocide in Gaza wherever we can.
One of the reasons that we wanted to talk to you is because you've been at the encampment all this time, but also you represent a group called Jewish Voice for Peace. Can you say a little bit about why you got involved and how you interpret your identity in line with protesters and groups like SAFE or Tahrir?
Yeah. So I got involved. Jewish Voice for Peace at the University of Michigan actually didn't exist until November. Students, like, over the years have kind of like formed Jewish Voice for Peace at the University of Michigan at various points. But by the time essentially that October 7th rolled around, there was no like active, loud, like organized anti-Zionist Jewish presence at the University of Michigan. And as the genocide in Gaza started to begin, it became more and more imperative for those of us who are Jewish students at the University of Michigan who are anti-Zionist to like organize and become like a more active, visible presence so as to not let organizations like Hillel and Wolverines for Israel claim to speak for the entire Jewish community. So that's how I got involved with Jewish Voice for Peace. There was like a group of us who kind of like got organized and formed Jewish Voice for Peace with the explicit aim of being like an active anti-Zionist Jewish voice to stand in support of SAFE and the Tahrir Coalition and to join the coalition, and also to disrupt like the very quickly consolidating narrative around like Jewish safety and like unilateral Jewish support for the state of Israel at the University of Michigan. And ever since then, we've been organizing in tandem with SAFE. Jewish organizers from JVP, myself included, have been like really at the forefront of organizing a lot of the stuff that the coalition has done, obviously like in tandem with our Muslim and like all of the other Muslim comrades, Palestinian comrades, and all of the other people in the coalition who have been working for this since November.
We have talked to a couple of Jewish students at Michigan who have felt less than safe around the encampment right now. They've seen signs like "Long Live the Intifada" that, in their experience, comes across as an aggressive statement. They have a different orientation to that language than, say, Palestinian American students. They've seen flyers that to them come across as hate speech or calling for violence.
It's been like pretty constant, like ever since October 7th, that many like Zionist groups on campuses are expressing feelings of like discomfort with slogans like "Long Live the Intifada" and "From the River to the Sea." And there's been like these phrases have been like hotly debated, and especially with like the word intifada, there's actually a lot of like Jewish scholars who have talked about the importance of using the word intifada. It's the Arabic word for uprising. You know, there's a lot of a lot of really important histories of Jewish uprisings, like the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And, you know, I think like many of us who are Jews who have been like organizing in this coalition for all of these months see it as actually like a very Jewish act to support uprisings against tyrannical governments and to support uprisings of the people in the face of genocide. The 81st anniversary of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was just a couple weeks ago, and Jews around the world celebrated the bravery and the courage of the people who stood up to the Nazis and fought back. Many of us see ourselves as doing a very Jewish act when we support uprisings against like genocidal governments. But actually, I think that's like getting away from the point a little bit, that like all of these Zionist groups who are claiming to like feel unsafe on college campuses, those are all like feelings of unsafety. But as we're watching like the material events that are happening in the world, we've seen over the past 7 months as every single university in Gaza has been destroyed. Like that is like actual, like real material unsafety. There is not a single safe university left in Gaza. And I mean, even here in the United States, the students who are facing like actual threats to their like physical safety on college campuses are the students who are protesting like it within the pro-Palestine movement and protesting for divestment from Israel on college campuses. And so I think that it's really important to distinguish between feelings of unsafety and perceived unsafety and maybe like discomfort with slogans and actual like physical violence and danger that's happening both in the United States, but most especially in Gaza over the last 7 months.
I want to come back around to some of the organizing and messaging that happened right in the wake of October 7th. One of the Jewish students that we spoke to said that her feeling of not being super safe with the pro-Palestinian protests began with a social post that organizers from SAFE put up just a few hours after the October 7th attack. Her interpretation was that it praised the attack. And looking at it, it doesn't actually use the word praise, but it was pretty strong in its wording that Hamas's attacks on Israel that day were part of the liberation of Palestinian people. And it didn't really deal with the fact that Hamas did take hostages and kill people. Do you have any reservations about working with SAFE, or, you know, how would you describe the working relationship that you have with some of the other groups at the encampment?
Yeah, we at JVP have no reservations about working with SAFE. SAFE has been like at the forefront of fighting for divestment at the university for the last 20 years. And those of us working at JVP, I think I speak for all of us when I say that we feel honored to learn about like the struggle for Palestinian liberation from SAFE. And SAFE has also been really consistent in supporting us. SAFE has paved the space for us to have things like Shabbats in the encampment or teach-ins about BDS. And it really has been like a coalitional, like strong relationship, and has really shown us that like it's possible and indeed like imperative for Palestinian-led and like Jewish-led groups to work together to end university support for the genocide. I also think that it's important to say that like that groups like SAFE, in my experience, and SAFE specifically at the University of Michigan, are adept at distinguishing anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. They are principled anti-Zionists and are very committed to the fight against anti-Semitism. The people who we work with at SAFE and SAFE as an organization understand that Jewish liberation and Palestinian liberation are intertwined with one another. And we all understand that this struggle is a communal one in many senses. I just want to emphasize that this encampment and this coalition is a multi-faith space, a multi-racial space. It's an incredibly diverse group of student organizers. But I also want to emphasize that it's an incredibly Jewish space. The encampment has been a safe haven for many Jews on campus who have felt alienated by organizations like Hillel and Wolverines for Israel, who claim to speak for the entire Jewish community. And it's been a space where Jews really for like the first time in many years at this university have been able to practice their Judaism in a way that feels authentic to them. And so I really just want to emphasize that not only is the encampment like not a threat to Jewish life, but for many of us, it's also been a safe haven for Jewish life. And I think that that's really important.
We had heard that folks at the encampment had made a decision not to speak with some people who might want to engage. Can you say more about that decision?
Yeah. So in order to keep everybody at the encampment safe, we have like a collective agreement that we do not engage with instigators or agitators trying to come into the camp. And this truly is a decision about safety. We understand the importance of dialogue. We know that like having conversations is important, but the encampment itself is obviously like a really open and kind of just like exposed space on the university's campus. We've seen how people are coming into encampments deliberately like trying to incite violence, deliberately like trying to like escalate conversations. And so in order to like keep everybody in the encampment safe, we've made the decision to like not engage with people who we think might be trying to, you know, instigate like really tense conversations, because we've seen across the country how that can like really escalate. So our top priority is like keeping everybody safe. And that's like where that decision comes from.
There's a perception that there's not an interest among folks in the encampment in talking about issues. Is that fair?
We understand the importance of dialogue and obviously like talking to one another and like educating other people and talking about like things that are happening is really important. But the encampment has a very specific goal, and that is to demand that the university divest and exert pressure on the university to come talk to us and have a serious conversation about divestment and what that would look like. So it's really important that we have these rules to like keep people safe and to kind of like keep our focus on the fight for divestment.
Katya, what's going to happen with the encampment now that the term is coming to an end?
We, those of us at the encampment, are committed to staying until the university divests. The rest is really in the hands of the university. We hope that the regents, we hope that the university comes to have a serious conversation with us about divestment. We hope that as more and more like horrible news comes out of Gaza, as the death toll rises, that the university finally realizes the moral imperative to divest from those who are enabling the genocide. But we will be out there until they do.
That's the Stateside podcast for today. I'm April Baer. Just a reminder that the University of Michigan does hold Michigan Public's broadcast license. Today's pod was produced by April Van Buren. Other producers on our show are Mike Blank, Ronia Cabansag, and Mercedes Mejia. Our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Audio Network. Thanks for listening. See you again tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Williams.
I'm Lester Graham. We've been working on a big project about Great Lakes birds called The Bird Connection.
It will look at ducks and trumpeter swans,
egrets and herons,
and piping plovers. Yes!
We'll discuss what we've discovered at a Michigan Public Issues and Ale event,
including how some problems for birds are problems for people.
It's at Arbor Brewing Company in Ypsilanti, the evening of May 21st at 7.
You can register at michiganpublic.org.